peace, goodwill toward men. That's what Christmas is all about, Charlie Brown.
Christmas can mean something so different to so many of us. In recent years, I've been interviewing some of my mother's sisters and old friends about what it was like to grow up on the prairies. I've interviewed some of these guests and asked them about Christmas memories and how Christmas was different for them on the prairies and if they had a story to share. So coming up next, I've got just a real brief interview that I did with my Aunt Mimi. So let's go to that now. Next, I'm talking with Marion Jorgensen of Vancouver, originally of McGee, Saskatchewan, about her favorite Christmas gift, a lovely memory of Christmas on the prairies in 1939. You once told me a story of when you and my mom, Margaret, were children and it was Christmas time, and you woke up in the morning and your family was very poor. You couldn't afford any extras. And there were your two presents for you and Margaret, that big surprise. What was the present and can you talk about it?
It was the Eaton Beauty dolls from Eaton's store in Winnipeg. And everybody used the catalog in those days to do shopping. We didn't go to town.
And the dolls, was it a popular item that other girls wanted to have?
Oh, yes. Everybody wanted an Eaton's Beauty doll.
If your family didn't have the money, who gave you the Eaton's Beauty doll?
My older sister. She worked out. She got $5 a month or something. And then you had to give it to the person that you're working for.
But you didn't know it was from her. You thought it was from Santa.
Yes, I did.
Can you talk about when you found out that she was the actual person who gave it to you?
Oh, just a couple of years ago, I found out that she had given it. It was quite a shock.
Imagine that. All those years, we're talking like 70 years, yeah. You thought it was Santa Claus who brought you those dolls.
Yes, that's right.
That's pretty exciting to know that your sister surprised you.
Yes. Well, they did what they could, you know. Everybody was so short of money.
Mm-hmm.
Gifts were very unusual.
Old toy trains, little toy tracks, little toy drums coming from a sack carried by a man dressed in white and red. Little one, don't you think it's time you were in bed? Close your eyes, listen to the skies. All is trains, little toy tracks, little toy drums, coming from a sack, carried by a man dressed
in white
and red.
The next audio clip is taken from an interview that I did in July 2014 with Stella Mumford. In that interview, we talked about her experience of growing up in small town McGee, Saskatchewan. We talked about her career as a country school teacher on the prairies. In this particular sound audio, we're talking about her experience at Christmas on the prairies. Let's hear that now.
Christmas was always a special time.
What was special about Christmas on the prairies?
When the depression was on, we just cut down an ordinary tree. We didn't have an evergreen.
And did you decorate the tree?
We did. We decorated the tree and we made decorations for the tree.
What kind of decorations did you make?
One thing I made, we make it a little paper thing and paste it together. And we did some of those things at school. And you start out with a piece of paper like that.
Well, you'd make rings of paper and attach them. You'd link them like a chain.
But you said it from.
You know what? We still do that today in schools.
Yeah, and that is so good. I think that is so good that they still do that because it shows that you don't need to have everything. You don't have to have a great big expense. Mm-hmm. But we used to make chains and chains. And they do make nice chains, don't they?
They do. Yeah. And what kind of traditions did you have other than the tree at Christmas? Did you have a special feast?
Oh, we always did. My mother always made Christmas cake. You know, as we kids got older and could help her with and buy her stuff, good stuff to put in the cake. Oh, she'd have, I think, 8 or 9 Christmas tree cakes. And she'd hang them up down in the basement, and that Christmas cake would last for a couple of months. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was very good.
And you would have snow for sure on Christmas Day.
Right. Oh, exactly. We would have been disappointed if there wasn't any.
And on that note, this next song goes out to Stella Mumford of White Rock, B.C. Little Frank Sinatra, let it snow, let it snow, let it snow. Merry Christmas, Auntie Stella.
Oh, the weather outside is frightful, but the fire is so delightful. Since we've no place to go, let it snow, let it snow, let it snow. It doesn't show signs of stopping, and I brought some corn for popping. The lights are turned down low. Let it snow, let it snow, let it snow. When we finally kiss goodnight, how I'll hate going out in the storm. But if you'll really hold me tight, all the way home I'll be warm. The fire is slowly dying, and my dear, we're still goodbying. As long as you love me so, let it snow, let it snow, let it snow. Outside is frightful, but that fire is delightful. Since we've no place to go, let it snow, let it snow, let it snow. It doesn't show signs of stopping, and I brought lots of corn for popping. The lights are way down low, so let it snow, let it snow, let it snow.
And up next, we've got a song from Bare Naked Ladies featuring Sarah McLachlan off their 2004 CD, Bare Naked for the Holidays. Here we go with God Rest Ye Merry Gentlemen.
God rest ye merry.
every gentleman, let nothing you dismay. Remember Christ our Savior was born upon this day to save us all from Satan's power when we were gone astray.
Oh, tidings of comfort and joy, comfort and joy. Oh, tidings of comfort and joy.
From God our Heavenly Father this blessed angel came, and unto certain shepherds brought tidings of the same. How that in Bethlehem was born the Son of God by name.
Oh, tidings of comfort and joy, comfort and joy. Oh, tidings of comfort and joy.
And this brings us to the Story Corner portion of tonight's show. The story I have for you is a story that I wrote in a creative writing class, and it is called One Christmas Tree. As my sister closed the curtains and told me to pretend we weren't home, I found a corner of the curtain to pull away from the window to look at the people walking toward our house. A man and a woman were each carrying a box, and when the woman stopped to shift the box in her arms, I knew the box was heavy. This made me smile. I jumped down from the couch and ran out of the room calling for my mom. "Wake up!" I shouted as I ran into my mom's bedroom. "They're here!" I shook her, but she pulled the covers up over her head and rolled over, away from me. From the living room, I heard a knock at the front door. I jumped off the bed and ran out of the bedroom. As I ran for the front door, my sister pushed me out of the way. "Open it," I said. "We don't need it," she spewed at me with pursed lips, again pushing me out of the way. I took a step back and watched my sister as her body tightened. I was afraid she'd hit me. She looked angry. As she blocked me from the door, I scrunched up my face. "Why don't you want the boxes?" I asked. Just then, as there was another knock at the front door, followed by the ringing of the doorbell, my dad came in the back door, having just shoveled the back driveway. As he kicked off his boots, I ran up to him and pulled at his sleeve. "They're here," I said. "They came with a tree this time." My sister rushed into the kitchen and frantically said to my dad, "We don't need it this year. Tell them we don't need it." My dad laughed as he brushed the snow off his shoulders and took off his coat, which he threw over the back of the chair. Then he started to walk toward the front door. "Dad," my sister pleaded, calling him back. He turned to her and said, "They're here. Might as well." With a pout and a fit, my sister brushed past me, heading toward the basement door, something she always did when she was mad. She fitfully opened it and looked back at my dad. She glared at him, waiting to meet his eyes, to hopefully change his mind. He did not look up at her, though, nor would he. Knowing this, my sister headed down the stairs, slamming the door behind her. My dad pretended not to notice, and instead he looked down into my eager eyes. "Okay, then," he said. "Let's let them in." I rushed to the front door. Unable to reach the lock, though, my dad unlocked it. But before opening the door, he gestured for me to go sit down. I sat. From the darkened living room, I watched my dad greet the two people on the other side of the door. As he stood before them, these two strangers, I saw my dad nervous. I wondered why. Clearing his throat, my dad spoke. "Evening," he said. I jumped down from the couch and peeked around the corner. A woman in a blue plaid coat stood on the top step holding a box, medium-sized. The man who stood behind her on a lower step had a big box, very big, really big. The woman smiled at my dad and spoke. "We're from the Catholic Women's League. We've brought your family a Christmas hamper and some gifts for the little ones to make the Christmas season more festive." Then she paused and gestured toward the man. "And my husband here has a tree yet to bring up." I watched my dad, waiting for him to say something, but he just looked down. Why was he looking down, I wondered. Then he cleared his throat again and opened the door more widely. "Come on in," he said. My dad took the box from the woman. Then the two people followed as my dad led them into the kitchen. I followed too. My dad and the other man put the two boxes on the kitchen table and then just stood there, staring at each other. I stared too. It was an awkward moment, silence between strangers. The only thing my dad had in common with these two people was the church and the Catholic Society and the boxes. My dad tried to fill the silence by saying, "Snow's coming down pretty heavy." "Sure is," said the man. "They expect 12 inches by morning," said the woman. "I know," said my dad. I listened, looking back and forth as they spoke. I watched as my dad talked to these strangers about things that had nothing to do with the boxes. I thought it was silly, but even still, in their awkwardness, they continued to talk about nothing. I didn't say anything, but instead, I stared at the boxes, waiting, as though the boxes would come to life, I guess. The woman noticed my keen interest and smiled at me. My dad noticed, too, only he was embarrassed and told me to go in the other room. As I dragged my feet out of the kitchen, I could feel their quiet. Then the man spoke in an excited tone, as if he just remembered something. "Oh, I'll get the tree." Grateful to have broken the silence, the woman said, "Yes, of course, the tree." My dad was grateful, too. "I'll get my coat." As the three of them went outside to get the tree, I climbed back up onto the couch and pulled the corner of the curtain away from the window to watch. The man looked like he was untying some rope to release the tree from the roof of his station wagon. After fumbling with the rope, the tree fell away from the roof rack, and my dad moved forward to catch it. As my dad stood it up and leaned it against the man's car, I saw my dad say something to the man. The man nodded and leaned forward, shaking my dad's hand. Before turning to go, my dad awkwardly turned toward the woman and nodded. She nodded back. Then my dad lifted the tree up onto the curb and waited as the two strangers drove away. Once their car got to the end of the block and turned the corner, my dad picked up the tree and turned to walk toward our house. as I watched my dad bringing Christmas out of the cold and into our house, I held the corner of the curtain wide open so I wouldn't miss a thing, and I smiled. We were going to have a Christmas tree, and we were going to have the boxes, and there would be snow again. Thanks for tuning in to another edition of The Arts Edge. Please tune in again next week for more stories. Next week, I will be airing A Christmas Memory by Truman Capote. For those of you who aren't familiar with this story, Capote originally published this story in Mademoiselle magazine in December 1956. This short story, which was reprinted in the selected writings of Truman Capote in 1963, was later issued in a standalone hardcover by Random House in 1966. In 2005, this story was yet one more time reprinted, republished in the Complete Stories of Truman Capote, which is when I first became aware of this story. It is a treasure, and it is a story that in many ways is autobiographical, and it tells the story of a young boy who is referred to as Buddy and his older cousin, who is unnamed in the original story. The boy narrates the story, and his older cousin, who is both eccentric and childlike, is his best friend. It is a heartwarming treasure of a Christmas story. So please tune in again next week at The Arts Edge for that story and for more Christmas songs and Christmas traditions. So stay tuned for the Jambalaya Show coming up next with Emily. And as always, I leave you with one final tune. This song is a recording by Natalie McMaster featuring Alison Krauss. Also a beautiful, heartwarming song. Here it is now, Get Me Through December. Good night, everybody. Have a wonderful weekend.
How pale is the sky that brings forth the prepares me again for the long bitter nights and the wild winter's day. My heart is grown cold, my love's stored away. My heart is grown cold, my love's stored. My tracks in the snow, where souls have been lost and the walking wounded go. I've taken the pain no girl should endure, but faith can move mountains, of that I am sure. That must come from within, and I've looked for the love that will bring me to rest, feeding this hunger beating strong in my chest, feeding this hunger beating strong. tracks in the snow, where souls have been lost and the walking wounded go. I've taken the pain no girl should endure. Faith can move mountains, of that I am sure. But faith can move mountains, of that I am sure. Get me through to
Pacific Cinematheque, a non-profit film society and center. They show over 500 films annually, featuring new talents, international, experimental shorts, classic, and contemporary. The organization also has a film library, film archives, and an educational program department. Come and feel the essential cinema experience. The cinema is located at 1131 Howe Street near Davie. Visit their website at cinematech.ca for upcoming films and more information.
Indie Van City Music Nights, developing a community of mutually supportive creatives, businesses, and venues in our city. Vancouver may not be a super city just yet, but we have community spirit and a helping hands mentality. Are you a local business? Let's talk cross-promotion. Venue? Let's talk about getting music and a crowd into your establishment. Artist? Get in touch with us about performing. Music lover? Suggest acts that you want to see coming through Vancouver. Whether you're a blogger, performing artist, cake maker, or dentist, let's find ways to support each other. Tweet at IndieVanCity and hashtag IndieVanCitizen to start the conversation.